Hi, everybody. Kurt Schlichter here for Unredacted Town Hall VIP podcast that I'm not doing in my car for once, which is always nice. I'm here with my pal, Drew Maddich, who's visiting me here in Houston, and thought we'd chat about a few things.
Here from Idaho, needed a week away. It's been an amazing week. We did some fun things and drank some good wine.
What are we drinking now?
We are drinking a wine called Cerca. It's from Mendoza in Argentina, and it's a Petit Verdot, which is one of the Bordeaux grapes, one of the five.
So it's like a French variety.
It's a French variety, but it's grown in Argentina up in the high mountains of Mendoza.
And is that known for good wine?
It's known for good wine. It's mainly known for Malbec, actually.
And we had some yesterday, which you really liked.
And that was quite good.
So Cerca is kind of our favorite. There's a little tasting room here in the Houston Heights that we unfortunately haven't been able to visit on this trip. But we're living large. You're kind of the conservative sommelier.
Yes. And I've been drinking since I got to Idaho 4 years ago. It's been kind of a transition. I brought 600 bottles of like California and Spanish and Italian and French wine with me.
Wow.
And mostly I've been drinking Idaho wine.
Idaho's got good wine?
I was surprised. When I started looking at houses up there, I didn't even know that wine was a thing in Idaho.
I didn't either.
And I get there, I pick a place to build a house, and only then do I find out that 20 minutes away are Idaho's vineyards down by the Snake River.
And the Snake River, of course, was a giant wall of water that washed out everything and put a lot of silt there. It's got a very interesting terroir.
There are a couple of different kinds. There's kind of loamy, rocky soil, like nearer the river. And then over on the other side of Lake Lowell, which is a man-made lake, there is some volcanic deposits. And there's a winery or two that actually grows their vines in that volcanic rock. And it's a different effect and equally good.
Well, hopefully we can, conservative sommelier can be a thing. Now, if you're thinking of moving up to Idaho, you're going to want to check out Drew's Instagram because he is now the realtor du jour in Idaho.
The conservative sommelier realtor.
The conservative sommelier realtor.
In Idaho. And I can help you move. Up there. I can tell you where you want to live. I'll drive you around. You can look around, make your own decision. And I'll be your concierge.
That sounds great. Now let's get into actual stuff. But just before we do, Kelly Turnbull number 9 is out for pre-order. Panama Red. Go get the 9th Kelly Turnbull. You've read some of it.
I've read the first chapter. It starts with a bang, like all of them do.
It always a good cold open.
And I expect nothing less. And I expect it's just going to get better. Hopefully, I'll be able to read it over the weekend.
Well, you were in Hollywood for many years. Do you agree this could make a pretty good series for Netflix or something?
My take on this whole series is that each book is a season.
Yeah.
And in the business, because that's my previous
right. Your previous
career.
Life. Like I was previously a lawyer, previously a soldier.
Exactly. In TV, we used to do 22 episodes a year. When
yes.
When CBS
I remember.
CSI.
I remember.
And then it started to cut down to 13. And then then when the streamers came in, it started to cut down to 8. And then now we're kind of between 6 and 8.
Why is it so hard to do them? Is it because the production values are higher?
The algorithm says that people only really hang in and lean in for 6 to 8 episodes. And
really?
Then it starts to fall off.
Interesting. I can see how that is. And I hope that's not true of the books, because Kelly Turnbull 9, Panama Red, needs to get a lot of action.
Well, and it will.
I think it is. It's yeah. Pre-order. It's been pre-ordered a few days, and it is selling.
It is selling like hotcakes or chicken and waffles.
Chicken and waffles, which you had today in Houston.
Yes.
How'd you like Tex-Mex?
Tex-Mex, I liked.
Yes.
The brisket was a tad sweet for me.
I liked it.
Did you?
Yeah, I was down with it.
I would prefer that it scorched my mouth a little bit more rather than kind of hit my sweet tooth. But it was still quite tasty. And the guacamole and chips were next level.
El Tiempo here in Houston was where we went, and I've enjoyed it greatly.
And it's the heaviest doors of any restaurant I've ever been to.
It was like going through a freaking vault.
Yeah,
I expected to see Val Kilmer and Robert De Niro robbing it and starting a machine gun battle on the street.
I was waiting for an evening bed check myself.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, look, we've gone 5 minutes without talking about current events, but sometimes you don't really need to talk about current events all the time.
Idaho wine is current events.
It is good wine. What are the varietals, by the way?
They're trying all kinds of stuff up there. They're basically trying everything. But the best, probably the best variety that grows in Idaho, in my opinion, is Tempranillo, the Spanish grape.
Really? Why would that be?
It's a combination of climate. Tempranillo doesn't need a really long season. Soils. Same latitude.
You know, it's still high desert.
It is high desert, as is Rioja. And, you know, there's some commonality there. So, and other grapes grow well too. I've tasted some good Malbecs. I've tasted some good Sangiovese.
Now, I had one that, I really liked at the Franchi?
Famici.
I'm sorry, God. And it was in one of my books too.
That's right.
What was that? Was that a cab?
That was, I can't remember what we had.
I don't know. It was good though.
It probably wasn't a cab because, I mean, although Famici does make a good cab, cab is one of the sort of blind spots in Idaho because cab needs a long growing season. Idaho doesn't have that. So the cabs that are good, the vines are really babied and hand canopied.
Hand massaged.
Yeah, really, really just babied through the whole season to get them to a good place.
Well, you know, if you baby your wines, we have a favorite from Sonoma, which is Small Vines.
That's right, Sebastopol.
So in Sebastopol, and it is it's like basically they're on a first name basis with every bunch.
And exactly. You know? Each one has a French name.
This is Giuseppe.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that's an Italian.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay. Now, people are going to want to talk a little about politics, but, you know, there's more to life than politics. But my column last week was, this is the best, that we had the best of times, this is the worst of times. And I wrote that headline. I'm not sure it summed it up because a lot of people are going, oh, this is going to be depressing. And it should be the opposite because I'm thinking, you know, 6 months ago, we were on top of the world. Trump's kicking butt on everything. And then this week, you know, everything, but we had Epstein and we've got and then the Democrats wetting themselves because Trump said we should hang the traitors. Also, Trump is a treason traitor. But, you know, who cares? Oh, and how did you hear he was mean to a reporter? He said mean things about her. Rapist, pedophile, actual Nazi racist was being mean to some reporter chick.
I heard something about Piggy, but I only heard fake news.
Yes, that's all I hear whenever they say anything. I don't know if this resonates to normal people, but if you're in the thing, it's kind of these things come in cycles, right? You're gonna have good times. You're gonna have bad times. We had a bad election. You can't sugarcoat it. It doesn't spell doom, but it was a bad election. These are the bad times, right?
Yes, but I also think that. Trump and the team need to take the narrative back like they had for the first 6 months and really give some effort to the economy and renew the push on the Fed.
Well, the Fed on Thursday decided to screw up the 600-point jump in the Dow by saying, well, you know, we had a really good we had an unexpectedly good jobs report. I guess we're not going to lower interest rates to something reasonable so people can buy houses.
They did the Fed version of that by, you know, in about 1,000 words saying, well, maybe not this time.
Yeah, I'm.
And that made the market go down
hugely.
Immediately.
And I think that they are definitely trying to screw Trump. I think, you know, we're supposed to have the impartial Fed, like we're supposed to have all these impartial institutions. Are you feeling any of them are impartial?
Here's what I think. What if you wanted to screw an economy and screw a president, what would you do? Exactly this.
Yes. Would you do anything different? Because inflation is already under control. And oh my God, I get so tired of people going, well, the prices haven't gone down. Dude.
That's called deflation.
It's called deflation, which brings about a whole other bunch of problems.
Now, it'd be great to see prices go down. And
that'd be very convenient. How do they go down if wages don't? You know, do you want to get paid less? Do you not have an understanding of basic economics? Yes, we're going to cut the prices of everything, even though you guys have more money.
To chase more goods.
Yeah, that's not exactly how everything works. That's exactly the opposite. And I'm sorry that and individual items will go down. Gasoline has gone down.
He took care of what? Coffee? What else this week?
Some meat.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was Jesse Kelly, who's a great guy. I know him very well. He's like, hey, you know, if we have some people are saying we have $10 a pound ground beef next year. And if we do, Trump's doomed. Well, I mean, that would suck. I don't think we're going to, especially with the gas coming down. But there are other problems. There are lots of see, the thing is, we have systemic problems, like with meat processing.
We've got, as you know, because you've been there.
I have.
There is an Angus farm about 3 miles away from my house.
I have been there.
It's where I get all
I met the creatures.
That's right. That's where I get all my beef, all my eggs, everything else. I talked to their owner last week, and she is really concerned about beef prices. And right now, she does not see them going down.
What is driving them?
You know what? She and I didn't talk about it. She was just kind of freaked out that she's going to have to raise prices again. And she doesn't know what that's going to do to her client base, but she can't make it work otherwise.
Some of it is,
of course it's demand versus supply, right?
Yeah.
But you know, you have very few places that are approved to process meat.
Yes.
You have smaller herds than, you know, we had 30, 40 years ago, and we have more people. So, you know, I'm not sure what the incentive is to really, or what the timeline is to really kind of reverse that.
Yeah. And I mean, well, look, we've got a year. I'm not sure. Is it feed prices? I mean, I'm hearing that, you know, they can't sell, you know, I couldn't sell soybeans to China. Well, I don't know if cows eat soybeans. I assume they eat a bunch of things. But, you know, if there's lots of extra food out there, that ought to be cheaper. Gas is cheaper.
But yeah, for this.
Maybe sending home illegal aliens.
That would help housing immediately.
Well, that would help out.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah. It would help rents.
Yeah.
And it would help housing supply.
And traffic.
And traffic.
Oh, my gosh. I'm getting so tired of this. How dare you enforce the laws? And I'm going to write about that, I think, Monday, which is we apparently have no right to make laws or enforce the laws we've passed because reasons and shut up.
No, we had rights to we had the right to make them because it made people, you know, it made politicians look strong. We just can't enforce them.
It just can't. Which kind of defeats the whole purpose of our democracy if you have a law and then it just doesn't get enforced. We decide on this policy, but you guys don't like it, so we can't do it because reasons? Oh, it's unconstitutional. Why? Because you like it. I'm getting tired of it. This is when I talk about the institutional problem, this is part of that problem, which is you have the institutions that are supposed to be neutral and supposed to be performing a function. And they're not always perfectly neutral. But when they take a side, yet expect you to treat them as if they're these neutral arbiters, you know, who should be respected rather than just other partisans, that doesn't work. And we're seeing that with the courts now. And I had a long stream of consciousness video on Friday about that very issue, which is, you
what
know.
What did you say? I haven't.
It is that... you have judges essentially going in and saying, "Well, I'm going to rule on partisan grounds, and I'm going to cloak it as legal grounds."
And you have Republican politicians in the House who will not impeach for that.
It's not going to I think they should impeach Boasberg. I don't think that, but he's never going to get convicted. But
that's okay.
Yeah, that is okay. But the problem is that you have leftist judges who don't, and this is a in all the institutions. You have these institutions the left's taken over, and they expect to be able to use them for their own leftist purposes. Yet we're supposed to still respect them. And we're supposed to still give them deference. That's the classic Iowa hawk. Identify and respect an institution, kill it, gut it, wear its pelt like a skin suit, and demand respect. That's it. They're like, "What? You're disrespecting the courts." Well, the courts aren't the courts anymore. The courts you want respect, that you want respected, aren't the ones that we're supposed to respect. Because I can't walk into a court as a conservative and expect a liberal judge to ever rule in my favor no matter what. It's not going to happen. And when I can't, you know, like, and it's a small example, and it's a jury, but remember the guy who got hit in the chest with a sandwich?
Yeah.
And they tried him for a misdemeanor, and people said, "Well, we got him on videotape hitting you, but we're not going to convict him anyway." Okay, you've just taken away my ability as a conservative to go to the court.
To seek redress.
You've said, "Well, you're not going to get it because I don't like you. Because screw you." Okay, now my choices are A, go, "Oh, well, I guess I'm a second-class citizen and that's fine." Or B, "Screw this, I'm going to find another way to protect myself, because you won't do it, courts."
Which is another reason that it is so important to keep the Senate for the last 2 years of the Trump presidency, because so far he's been able to make even the Ninth Circus, you know, about a third, conservative-ish, or pro-law. We'll call it pro-law, which all that means is there's more work to do.
And the fact is, you know, you see all these things, Supreme Court rules against the leftists again. Most of the alleged conservatives on the Supreme Court would be happy to vote with the leftists if they thought the leftists were right. This is not, "Well, I'm a right winger, I'm going to vote for you." The left wingers, yes. Left wingers will always vote left wing. The right wingers, you have to actually be correct on the law. And we're at some like 95% success rate before the Supreme Court.
With all this stuff.
And a lot of it's, you know, a good part of it's, well, what you choose to appeal.
And that's kind of the one sort of highlight of the Attorney General's record.
Yeah. I mean, that's, sure. You know.
That they've been able to kind of keep things moving.
They've kept it moving very slowly. But the thing is, you know, you have all these district court judges who've decided, and I'm going to write more about it probably Monday. When this comes out, so go check it out. If I write on this, I may write something else. It is essentially, you guys, you know, you can vote however you want, but you don't get to exercise power. Because we're just going to define anything that you want to do as unlawful or unconstitutional, no matter what. You don't get to ever win. You can get elected all you want, but you don't get to govern. And that... Yeah, does that sound like something that's going to, you know, going to go on forever? Does it sound like something that can go on forever? No.
It will not end well, as they say.
No, it will not end well. And this is happening all over the globe. You look in Germany. There's the biggest party, and it's still a minority, but it's a plurality. The AfD is... The established parties have decided, well, you're Nazis, so you don't get any say, and also we're going to persecute your members. Okay.
Sound familiar?
They love Putin. You guys, the establishment's literally doing Putin. You don't get to rule. It is a false democracy. That's very, very dangerous. I mean, we had these retarded legislators who, some of them have been in military, some of them in intelligence, and going, you don't have to, you know, you soldiers, you don't have to follow unlawful orders. First of all, we know how it works. We're all trained in that. We don't need a bunch of dipshits grandstanding. But, you know, there's going to be some stupid barracks lawyer guy who goes, well, I have decided that you can't deploy me to Memphis to help the police. I have decided this because, you know, I'm smart, not dumb like everybody says. I'm smart and I want respect. And he's going to get, you know, court-martialed. Well, and these ass wipes are not going to be there.
Either that or Sergeant Hulk is going to take his big toe and see how far he can stick it up his ass.
Yes. Yes.
So.
And again, now we want a system where commanders can't command. We want every, 24-year-old specialist
and if you don't think,
an Instagram account to...
And if you don't think a judge is going to tell the Secretary of Defense and the Commander-in-Chief what they can or cannot do, you're mistaken.
Well, look, I am just waiting for some judge somewhere to say you can't blow up
a Venezuelan
boat. Drug boats. Yeah. You know, the innocent fishing boats with three outboard motors on them. And at which point Trump's going to look at the Supreme Court and go, you've got about 48 hours to unfuck this. To unscrew this, and or I am going to just do it anyway, because you don't. A district court judge does not get to usurp the president's core authorities, and part of how the Article III system works, the judges work, is modesty. They don't overstep to provoke the other branches because they don't have cops. They don't have soldiers. All they have are papers. I write an order. You will do this. And Trump can go, Nancy Pelosi that shit. And at some point, he hasn't done it yet, and I don't think he should do it yet, but at some point...
That's going to be the one.
Well, that may well be. At some point, some judge is going to say, I'm going to take a core presidential power and decide that I have a right to approve it or disapprove it. And Trump's going to go, no, Supreme Court. I mean, you better unscrew it because I'm not going to abide by it. And you've got some of these judges are not listening to what the Supreme Court says. Supreme Court hasn't nuked them. But look, if you want to save the judicial system as we know it, it's going to take disciplining some of these leftist junior judges who are overstepping. The idea that somehow people are going, well, you know, guy in the some Hawaiian district court judge has said, I'm not allowed to be president anymore. I guess that whole election thing's over. It's not happening. And my favorite part is a guy who practiced in the federal system. Again, for 30 years, I was in the Ninth Circuit. I've done all that stuff. Is when they're hyper focused on procedure, right? To keep their rulings from being reviewed. And then the rulings are just complete bullshit. So substantively, it's complete nonsense. And the authority's very clear. But then they're like, oh, well, you know, under these things, there's no way the Court of Appeals can rule on this. You know, this injunction must stand for at least 30 days, that kind of crap.
Well, or just don't let the dissenting judge weigh in.
Or don't let that was another one. Oh my gosh. That case in Texas. We'll just not let him weigh in. That's good plan. Because, you know, federal judges love being told no. But that's part of the problem. They've got, if you're a federal judge, you've got to be wise enough to know, no. I mean, look, there is a, somebody sued in Washington, D.C. over cleaning the executive offices building and repainting it. Okay? It's assigned to a federal judge who is a Trump-hating liberal. I don't know if she's ruled on anything yet. They're asking for a restraining order to keep the government from power washing it, literally, and then painting it.
This doesn't have anything to do with the ballroom, does it?
No. And the reason it came up is the Fed said, okay, we're not going to do anything until after Christmas, which, you know, sometimes you make an agreement not to do anything. Okay, and that's fine. But, you know, some basic questions come up that I think the judge should have, I think the Fed should have brought it to the judge's attention immediately, but the judge on her own, and they do it in civil cases. They'll be like, they'll say, you know, who has standing? Who is the guy who has suffered an irreparable injury that can be remedied by me not letting the executive office building be power washed and painted? And there's a guy who works nearby who's offended by it, and he doesn't get to see it in its historical context. This is absolutely serious. A group of buildings nearby who say, well, it'll look bad. Okay. Not standing. And that's the kind of thing, because judges are always looking to get a case thrown out, because then that's one less case. So often somebody will file a case, and like a day later you'll get, I don't understand why this is in federal court and not state court. You've got, you know, 48 hours to file a document telling me why I shouldn't toss it. All the time. This happens all the time. Where's that? Because if I'm a judge, I'm looking at it going, all right, immediately I'm having an issue with standing here. Before we even move into a motion to dismiss and a temporary restraining order, I need you to show cause why I shouldn't dismiss because of standing. Maybe you got standing. I don't know. Brief it. Show me why you think it has standing, because it doesn't appear to. That hasn't happened. And that kind of thing happens in other cases. And, you know, the fact that the fact that we can't expect to have fair and impartial treatment is devastating to the idea that we should be submitting to these institutions. Does that make any sense?
It does make sense. And I don't know how much of this you've talked about, but I remember when all this was starting earlier this year. You know, you had said, you know, I've been in court for 30 years. This is not how it is.
No. Oh, the procedural stuff's all insane.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, we filed suit on a Saturday night, and within an hour, the liberal judge said, no, the president can't deport illegal aliens.
And by the way, we won't even let the DOJ brief on it.
Yes.
I'm just going to rule on it.
Yes. Okay. I'm looking at this stuff, and it doesn't happen. Right. They create new procedures. But when you want to challenge the procedures, suddenly it's like, well, it's a temporary restraining order, not a permanent injunction, even though it has all the aspects of a permanent injunction, except the permanence. You know, you can't appeal it. You just have to sit there, and I'll get to a hearing on in 4 weeks. So 4 weeks, the federal government's unable to.
And by the way, I'll be doing the hearing.
Yes. And I'll be doing the hearing, at which point. Rubber stamps, it calls a permanent injunction. Okay, now you can appeal. Now you can start that process.
Yeah.
And then they're outraged. Wow, I can't believe the Supreme Court staying these. That's unprecedented. Well, guess what?
What else is unprecedented?
Yes, guess what happened? When the action's unprecedented, what's the response going to be? Unprecedented. But yeah, this stuff doesn't happen. And all these, and it's amazing. There are laws that say, you know, a federal district court has no jurisdiction over immigration cases. And then the judges are going, I do now, essentially. And then you've got to appeal that. And I just, it's just not going to end well. You can't create a system where we're kind of like shamed into accepting that, well, I guess we're screwed. I guess
To follow the process.
We have to follow the process, even though, well, there is no process when it comes to us. You know, we have to follow the process and take the costs of the process, but we never, ever get the benefits. That's not realistic. What kind of child expects that that's ever going to happen? And then, of course, we have the Epstein idiocy. I do like how it turns out Lawrence Summers, Democrat, gets screwed on that.
Hakeem Jeffries. Stacey Plaskett,
who's not
really a representative.
Yeah, she's fake representative. Yeah. Who's dumber, Plaskett or Crockett?
Well, that's a race to the bottom.
Like, who's dumber, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
The
one who said A. Jeffrey Epstein. That's the dumb one.
Oh, yes. A. Jeffrey Epstein. Yes. The Jeffrey Epstein is not the Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, oh, that's cool. That sounds good.
Yeah.
That's smart. I keep seeing so much of what I see in the regime media is either people who are dumb talking or people who think you're dumb.
I think it's mostly the latter, you know, because I can count the really dumb ones on one or two hands.
There are some dumb ones. Yeah. But yeah. Like just the other day we had NBC News comes out breathlessly saying, sources say a lawyer at the Department of War opined that the blowing up Venezuelan drug boats was illegal, but he was overruled. Okay. I've never had somebody who agreed with me about the facts and law on the other side ever once in 30 years. Lawyers disagree about things. I would expect there are lawyers who disagree about the legality of the drug boats. I think it's a bad legal argument, but I am sure there are people who accept it. There are also people who don't. But the idea that, well, one lawyer says, well, you know, I'm a lawyer. I don't think it's illegal.
Isn't Jasmine Crockett a lawyer? Or is she?
I don't know.
Well,
just because you're a lawyer doesn't mean you're not a freaking moron.
Well, yeah.
I mean, Kamala Harris, who flunked the bar.
I mean, how
three times.
Well, Villaraigosa. I don't think he ever got.
I don't think he ever did. Hillary failed the District of Columbia bar. Do you know what the district? You know how stupid you have to be to fail the District of Columbia bar? Now, I just waved into it, right, because I already had my ticket from California, the hardest bar.
Is there a reciprocity there?
No, California has no reciprocity.
No, I'm talking about in D.C.
Oh, yes. D.C. will take you if you're admitted anywhere and no ethical issues.
And Hillary failed that.
Hillary took the bar exam in D.C., the easiest bar exam. Here's her question. Do you have a pulse? That's the D.C. bar exam, okay? California's, it wasn't hard for me because A, I studied, and B, I'm not dumb, nor my mom. Mom passed the first time.
Oh.
But about 54% of people pass.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't. So you're not necessarily a genius because you're a lawyer. But the idea that there's a right answer among lawyers, among law, no. There's the answer that, you know, the judge agrees with. But and the other thing is overruled. How do you overrule someone who can't rule?
You don't overrule an underling.
Yes.
Really?
I'm not overruling you because you're not ruling at all. Lawyers are advisors to the commander. Nothing more. They are advisors. I wrote an article on that for Infantry Magazine. People can go look it up, The Combat Jag. I said, hey, I'm a lawyer in civilian life. I'm a combat arms commander. I was a cavalry commander. Here's how you use your jag. Okay. He doesn't tell you anything. Okay. There are people out there who think it's like this priesthood of geniuses who will reveal the truth to you, like the Oracle of Delphi. And then you ignore it at your peril because they're always right. Yeah.
Are you talking about lawyers as being, what did you say, a priesthood of geniuses?
Yeah.
Said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they're a priesthood, but not necessarily a genius.
Yeah.
But you dealt with enough. And
yes.
And some are very smart and savvy. And they don't always tell you what you want to hear, but right. That's the most important thing to tell you.
And you also know when to push back and see how much they really believe this.
Yes. it is exponentially easier to say, no, you can't do it. No, we can't do that.
Tell me why.
Tell me why. Now, I would take it another thing further. I go, okay, you don't think I can do it. That's all right. Thank you. I want tonight before I go to bed, because we'd be on the field or whatever, I want a written memo. I want you to outline the issue that you're answering. I want you to give me the rule. You will attach photocopies of the case authority, statute, regulation, whatever you think applies, and highlight what I should look at because I'm going to read it myself. Then you will do an analysis, including addressing contrary arguments, and then give me your conclusion. And then I will have that in writing. And if I'm wrong and have done something really wrong, I've got right there. I outline the argument. It was very compelling, and you didn't listen. Schlechter, what's wrong with you? Or I will go, no, that's wrong, and maybe ask you to rewrite it. It is amazing how often the lawyer would start going, well, you know, maybe I don't. Maybe it's not. Maybe there's this other way. Oh, you think? Tell me about this other way you're going to make it happen for me.
Now, is it that you are asking them to show their work or?
Just work.
Yeah.
But no, they're absolutely not. The JAGs are not trained to show their work because at JAG school, I've never gone to JAG school because I've never been a JAG. I have the distinct impression they're taught, oh, all these knuckle-dragging idiots, you've got to save them from yourself. Okay. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And I would take the JAGs and I would do things like I would make them honcho an operation, you know, go through. You're the captain in charge of the planning for this.
Yeah.
And you're going to make sure all the planning process is done. You're going to oversee the decision brief, the course action brief, all that stuff. You are the project officer for this. And it's like a military operation.
It's interesting you should say that because institutionally, the entertainment business is very similar. There's an attitude in the studios that you are there to make sure the shows don't mess up.
Yeah.
You know, and there is a part of that.
Yes.
But
it's a good part. I'm a good lawyer.
your main job is to do what you can to make them succeed.
Yes. There's a difference between I'm watching out for you idiots and I'm part of the team and let's make it happen.
That's right.
And sometimes you can't make it happen. It's important for a lawyer to say, hey, sir, here's the statute. This is what it says. And you want to do this. And that's totally – and you're going to get screwed if you do it.
But your number one job is to have their back.
Yes. But if you do it this way, you know, you can get what you want or what you need.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can't get what you want, but you get what you need. Mm-hmm. Somebody said that. Mm-hmm. And NBC News, breathless, a lawyer disagreed with other lawyers. What do we call that? The legal profession.
We call it life.
Jeez. It's so obnoxious. I just don't. I'm so tired of people not doing their part in the system. You know, you if we have a system, everyone's got to play a role. And yeah, you can fight and argue and stuff. But if there aren't rules and norms and customs, then it's Calvin ball. And okay, then I guess I have to win the Calvin ball way. There are no rules. Why aren't you respecting the courts? Because they don't respect me. Why would I respect the courts?
Yeah.
Are you giving me some more Petit Verdot? You
put it right there on the port so everybody can hear how good this wine is.
It is good, isn't it?
How'd that sound?
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, huh?
It is pretty good.
Yeah. I'm very happy we discovered Cerca, Cerca, from Argentina.
Yes, two out of the three Cerca wines that you've poured for me have been really good.
Yeah, she didn't like the rosé.
I did not, and I like rosé.
I liked it, but that's okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. I if I was batting 667, I would be that guy Shono Ohtani?
Shohei Ohtani.
I would be Shohei Ohtani would be like going, I'm not worthy.
That's right.
I mean, who gets 66%? No one.
That's right.
I mean, it's a terrible analogy, but it sounds clever.
Two out of three ain't bad, as somebody said.
Two out of three ain't bad. I think that was that Dawkins?
That was Meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
That's right.
My favorite kind of loaf. Actually, it's sourdough loaf.
Yep.
I'm not. How do you get the name Meatloaf? Isn't his name real name like Jeff?
His real name is, oh gosh.
Was.
Aday. His last name is Aday, and I can't remember his first. Marvin Aday.
Marvin
I
Aday?
Believe it's Marvin Aday. I got to look that
Wasn't
up.
Wasn't he like Albanian or something?
I don't know, but I'll be right
back. Oh, great. Now we're going to. Welcome to Meatloaf Talk, where we'll do anything for you, just not that. How was that?
That's pretty good.
You like that?
That's pretty good.
Meatloaf Talk. Yeah, you know there's a Meatloaf Talk podcast out there.
Oh, of course. Let's see what we got here.
Or as they call him, the loaf. Meatloaf. Marvin Lee Aday.
There it is.
Why was he called Meatloaf? It says right there.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. He was later called M.L., Marvin Lee.
Oh.
But when his weight increased, his seventh grade classmates referred to him as Meatloaf.
Because he was 5'2" and 240 pounds?
There you go.
Dude. That's
really nice guy. Met him.
You've met Marvin Aday?
I did. He was in one of my shows.
Which show?
A show for USA called Fairly Legal.
Fairly Legal.
Fairly Legal.
Phew! I thought it was the Epstein Files.
Yeah. He was cast, and I said, okay, I'm going to bring him in for looping because I want to meet him.
And looping is redoing dialogue.
Redoing dialogue.
Okay. Which was just fine, but you brought him in anyway. It could have been better.
I found a couple that...
You found a couple problems.
I found a couple problems.
You need some tweaks.
Now, a musician should be really good at looping because they know rhythm, and you uh-huh. have to get back into a rhythm and into a okay. place. It's
terrible. Terrible at it?
He was terrible at it. But we got what we needed, and then he stayed around and just signed and took pictures for everybody.
Nice guy?
Great guy.
Tiny guy, though.
No, he was a big guy.
Really?
Yeah. He was maybe 5'8", something like
okay,
that.
Okay, so he grew because yeah. the interwebs say he was 5'2".
A little, well, that was as a kid, I think.
Oh.
But, I think he's taller than Roger Daltrey.
Really?
But,
Tall, isn't he?
Daltrey's 5'6", if he's anything.
Really?
Yeah.
You just saw him on their farewell. How were they?
They were fantastic.
You took us to the Who, and Arena just had an appendix.
Appendectomy, yeah.
Yeah.
2 days before.
2 days before. I'm not missing the Who! Mm-hmm. I won't get burst again! Since we've got you, we can close out with some Hollywood fun stuff. Who are some of the cool people you've met in Hollywood? People who, were just cool. And that you mm-hmm. wouldn't think that they were cool. Like Meatloaf. I mean, I would think Meatloaf would be a cool guy.
Meatloaf.
He always struck me as cool.
Meatloaf was a cool guy. I didn't meet a lot of that, that's not one I was quite ready for, but I didn't meet a lot of Hollywood people.
Really?
I just didn't. I mean, I was in the executive ranks and there were some very kind people in the executive ranks. And then there were some real
monsters.
Tools.
Most of them leftist.
Most of them leftist. Yeah. But I can say this now because MGM doesn't exist kind of anymore the way it did, having been eaten up by Amazon. It was a very safe place for us.
They didn't care.
They did not care.
Just get it done.
And some of them were very quietly
conservative.
Yes.
Interesting. What's the – look, Hollywood's got problems. What do you diagnose the problems with Hollywood are?
Oh, I'm trying to see a world where Los Angeles comes back, and I don't see it.
Really? Los Angeles is the film
as well, a film capital,
among other things.
Well, I mean, I said race to the bottom earlier. It kind of is that, where you've got countries and states trying to out subsidize each other.
And the only reason we were talking yesterday about maybe what it would take to produce a Kelly Turnbull series. And all you were saying was, well, subsidy here, subsidy there. And I'm like, is it all about subsidies? And you're like, yes.
It's all that's all the studios do is chase the subsidies. What happens is when a script lands on our desk, the showrunners and the studio creators said, you know, we'd love to do it in LA. What does it cost? So we would do an LA budget and a New Jersey budget.
Is a LA budget how different is an LA and New Jersey budget?
Well, in New Jersey, you have a line item that of the incentive that knocks 30% off of your production cost.
Do you actually collect the incentive?
You do.
Okay, so I heard there are some states that are some reluctant.
Some states are easier than others.
Some states eventually again.
Yes, some states are easier than others. New Mexico.
So basically, it's like, you know, the state of New Jersey is going to pay for a third of your budget.
Ish, yeah. I mean, of your labor, of all of your spend there. Some places even allow you to take an incentive on your above the line, your actors, your producers. Yes.
You have to do the contract there or somewhere.
You know what? I'm not sure the mechanics of it, but as we were doing budgets, I learned that some of them do that. The UK was one as we were doing a budget. The UK let you use those amounts as well, but they have more to make up for because the dollar and the pound are kind of at odds.
Right? You take all that into account with your budget.
Yes.
And there are people who do. I assume there are people who do nothing but figure out subsidies.
I mean the people who are still in those production jobs, those heads of production, know, and you know, the accountants just know this stuff by heart. And during COVID, the hardest job to fill on a show was a production accountant.
Really?
Because production accountants want to be producers. They don't want to be production accountants forever. But they're the key to bringing your show in because they know all the angles.
If you're an accountant and you want to work in Hollywood, is that one of the easiest ways to get in?
I spoke to a Boise State class. Uh-huh. Right around the time I moved there.
Uh-huh.
And I said, if you want to work forever in this business, even now when nobody's working, become a production accountant. Start as a second assistant now, or even as just as an office person, and move your way up. You will never.
If you have an accounting degree.
I don't know how many of them have accounting degrees.
Oh, so they're not like CPAs.
No.
Interesting.
They just know where the bodies are buried and how to work the system.
See, that's good advice.
And when I got into the business, you know, in the late 1500s, I had an accountant tell me, if you know how your shows work from a budgetary standpoint and a cost standpoint, in addition to the creative standpoint, you'll never not work. And she was right.
And it's funny, since I've known you, you're always saying, yeah, we're working on the budget on this. And I'm like, gosh, that doesn't sound all fun and everything. But A, it could be fun.
Well,
but B, it's a business.
It's fun to figure out the angles.
Yeah. It's a puzzle.
And it's also pretty easy. I mean, for me.
Well, yeah, well, you're a numerate guy. You're not like a UCSD grad like me.
Yeah, well, yeah.
1/8 of the people in my formerly top 10 college mm-hmm. Can't perform at middle school.
And what about the other 3/4?
Probably
that
less.
That was a joke.
Yes. Thank you.
That's the jokes.
That's a good one.
Yep.
By the way, I got my only C in college in calculus.
Ah, okay. Well, I never took a math course after my sophomore year in high school.
I got an F in calculus in high school.
And by the way, Excel is your best friend.
Yes. I would imagine there are spreadsheets for everything.
I made spreadsheets for everything.
And just cut and paste in a lot of ways. You're always going to have what's your insurance cost, what's your workers' comp.
You need a schedule? Okay, I've got this template.
Just what schedule do you want?
Yeah.
When you're scheduling, let me ask about a show. This is fun stuff, stuff we don't get.
Yeah.
So if you're not into this stuff, I'm sorry that you're getting this kind of value. I will watch a Netflix show with 8 shows, and they'll have a different director for for each show, right?
Yes.
But they're doing a lot of stuff on the same sets, including outside, same locations. Do they do them all at once, or do they go keep going back with a different director?
You will, in most of the streaming shows these days, you will crossboard. You will do episodes 1 and 2 with the same director.
Oh, interesting.
You will do episodes 3 and 4 with the same director, 4, 5, and 6.
And he'll be doing the same shows at the same time.
Yeah, you'll be shooting 1 and 2 all, you know.
We're at the mountain cabin with characters 1 and 2. They're going to be there for 2 episodes. I'm going to film both episodes Thursday and Friday.
That's what we do.
We just need different clothes.
That's what we do. Different clothes, different. The actors have to put themselves in the different place.
Yeah.
You know, all the.
Is it tough on the actors?
Have you seen what actors get paid?
That would make it easier for me.
Yeah.
People ask, how can you argue that? I'm like, well, I was billing like $700 an hour.
Yeah.
It was easy.
Yeah. So that's how they do it.
I need a little more.
Put it right in front of the microphone.
We're going to finish this bottle. This is good.
This is good.
Right?
It's good. It doesn't taste much different than the Malbec last night, I'll be honest.
Really? I think it tastes
It's a little darker.
It's a little more California-y.
Yeah, it's a little darker.
I would have this with steak before I'd have the Malbec, and I love the Malbec.
I like that. This has a little more tannin in it, and a little, you know, sort of a little the pucker value is a little pucker quotient.
My gosh, we ought to do a conservative wine tasting somewhere.
How about uh-huh. on a cruise ship?
Ahoy. Anyway, back to what we were talking about. So you're doing cross things.
So we crossboard, yeah. Shoot 2 episodes at once.
And do you do a
sometimes 3. I mean, we had a showrunner who wanted to crossboard all 8, but the problem is the more episodes you do that to,
it affects you
can do it. It's just a bigger puzzle, but it also affects you down the line because you don't finish any episode until the end.
That's right. And so you can't start editing.
Well, you can start editing. You just can't finish editing.
Got it. Because it's not just shooting. Then it's the editing and the process, the looping.
The looping, the visual effects, all the posts.
When do you do the rights? So there'll be a song that you recognize in there as opposed to the terrible music most of these things have. Mm-hmm. And most of the music's fucking awful.
All the ways. I mean, the rights happen all the time. I mean, a lot of times the song is in the script because the writer has a vision.
Writer says, I have a vision. I want Million Miles Away by the Plimsolls. And somebody goes out and calls Peter Case's agent.
Publisher and the record label, and they get the rights.
Is there usually a hassle with it, or is it like...
It depends on the artist and the publisher. It's like everything else, it's a relationship business. So the music executives that have the good relationships will have an easier time with the labels and with the publishers. It's who you know.
Hey guys, can I get Million Miles Away for, you know, I can give you $10,000. Well, we're going to need 15.
We're going to need 50.
50 grand?
Yeah. It's going to be more like that.
Really?
Yeah. There used to be a thing where, you know, you could get it for 10, but you would only have the rights for 3 years. And a lot of studios did that.
And then they have to go change.
And then they wound up owning shows that
were
obsolete. That they had to replace the music on. Hello, Dawson's Creek. I worked on Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek did that? And they had to go back and either buy the rights again or change all the music.
And we did both.
There are shows, I have seen movies where I'm like, they had a different song here
yes.
the last time, and that's why.
And there was WKRP when it aired, you mm-hmm. know, when it aired, there was a time where you didn't hear the Rolling Stones in it when you did on the original CBS broadcast because those rights
lapsed
and they wound up putting in library music basically. And then Shout Factory, the DVD people uh-huh. came in, got the rights to do it. And they put like 95% of the music back and they put it out on DVD.
See, that's nice.
It is nice. It is nice.
That's interesting because if I were, you know, songs I like. That's a big price though.
But so it can happen on the script. It can happen. The director might say, oh, this song would be good here. Now, what the director says in television won't always hold because it's not really a director's medium in television. It's a writer's medium.
They're a functionary.
They're a guest.
A guest.
Yes.
It's the showrunner who's usually the writer also, or a writer.
Correct. So a lot of times a director will say, well, let's try this song. And so we will start to clear that and see what the cost would be. And then right up to the mix, there are balls in the air, musical balls in the air that you have to figure out. I'll confession, we delivered a show before a song cleared.
Ooh.
That could be risky.
We did.
It worked out.
It worked out.
$50,000 for a old catalog song like Million Miles Away.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of dough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm glad the artist is getting paid. And they got to get paid somehow.
And I'm a year removed, but it's probably in that ballpark, maybe a little more. But that gets you, you know, what they call perpetuity rights, all media worldwide in any universe conceived now or not.
And then the guys in the plimsolls are like, oh, I just got an extra $7,000 check after everybody else takes their piece.
Peter Case might have.
Oh, because he got some publishing rights. Right. The other guys might not.
Right. I don't know what the plimsolls deal is. Yeah. You know, Townsend gets all the Who publishing.
Oh, really?
But they split the masters, I think.
Oh.
Okay. You buy the song itself, uh-huh. the publishing, the written composition, and then you buy the master, which is the recording. So you have to buy two different things to get a song.
Oh, interesting. And they total 50.
And they there's usually favored nations between the two of them. So if you pay 25 for one, you're going to pay 25 for the other.
Okay. And is it a negotiation or is there like, oh, here's a price list?
It's a negotiation. I mean, we had a thing on Joan of Arcadia where I wanted to use Warren Zevon's version of Back in the High Life.
Okay.
In a scene.
Okay.
And it was this world weary, kind of sad version. It was really counterpoint to the song. And it was a really cool version. So we went to Steve Winwood and Steve Winwood said, yeah, we'll let you use the song, but you got to use Steve Winwood's master. Which defeats the whole purpose, right?
Ugh.
So, you know, this depressing scene, we're using Back in the High Life by Steve Winwood. No. So we wound up walking away, started mixing the show with something else, and they came back to us and said, okay, go ahead.
You can do Zevon. So he gets a performance money.
So
and Winwood gets the publishing.
Right. So they basically got smart and said, okay, half a loaf is better than none.
Are they desperate? Not desperate, but are they eager to sell rights usually?
Yes, because what do records sell now?
Nothing.
Yeah.
I don't understand how. I don't understand the publishing industry. I don't understand the music industry. I don't understand Hollywood.
Yeah.
Are people in Hollywood making money?
They wouldn't be doing it if they weren't making money. I mean, Disney makes money.
Just and trying to figure out,
you know,
how.
Comcast, Universal makes money. I don't know the accounting at that level. There's probably some CPAs up there.
Yeah.
In the black tower.
There's some folks up there.
Yeah. I'm not one of those.
Well, you were with the show, yeah, making sure the show was squared away.
I was with the show first. And then for the last 5 years, I was at MGM with the studio. And then I was with Amazon, but I wasn't really with Amazon because I wasn't kind of down with Amazon.
Yeah. Amazon's doing its own thing.
They are.
It wants to do its own thing, and we'll see if it works.
That's right.
Well, we're about an hour. It's probably the longest I've ever done.
Wow.
I think it was good. We talked a little politics. Had a lot of wine. Yeah. I mean, we're almost done. We're going to finish it, too.
Yeah, we will.
Guess who's driving to the airport?
Irina.
Yes. I think people had a chance to learn about some stuff that they don't get to talk about much or hear about much. What do you have to add? Anything?
I think I'm pretty good.
We're about an hour.
We'll get out in under an hour.
Okay. All right. Well, this has been Unredacted with my guest Drew Manich.
Maybe next time we'll actually do a wine tasting.
We could do
an actual wine
tasting. We could do that. I want to figure out a way to do a conservative wine tasting someplace. Storm, are you listening? Get me and Larry out here, and then you supervise the wine tasting. But we have guests.
Virginia versus Idaho.
Virginia versus Idaho. That's actually not a bad idea. Ooh. All right, I'm thinking. It's in my head, Dale. Okay, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday are my columns. Tuesday and Friday are my stream of consciousness. course, next week we'll be back for another Unredacted, the Thanksgiving episode. Maybe I'll record it on Thanksgiving.
Virginia is toast, by the way.
Oh, Virginia. Texas is bad wine,
too. Yeah.
I mean, bad.
I'll put
Idaho. Like Temecula.
Yeah.
Temecula wine's terrible. Yeah. Sorry, Temecula. Very pretty place, but your wine just does not work for Kurt. Mm-hmm. Follow me on Twitter at Kurt Schlichter.
Follow Drew on Twitter.
Follow Drew on Twitter at Drew Matic, and follow you on Instagram for all things Idaho.
At D Matic.
D Matic.
M-A-T-I-C-H. D-M-A-T-I-C-H. Instagram. You'll learn about real estate and cisterns.
Cisterns. There's a cisterns. Cisterns are doing it for themselves.
That's right.
Panama Red, the new Kelly Turnbull novel, number 9. Go get it. Pre-order Panama Red. It's amazing. Leave your comments and
is that Steely Dan song? Babylon Cisterns.
Babylon Cisterns. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
All right, Steely Dan. The band named after a dildo.
That's right.
Okay. Hey, on that note, thanks a lot. Adios. Bye.